I can tell a Star Wars related joke, I guess. It's not dirty.
So. That's the first important thing.
But so there's these two Jawas go to the Star Wars cantina, and one Jawa says, "Hey, who was that lady I saw you riding around in your sandcrawler with?" And the second Jawa says, "That wasn't any lady, that was my wife." get it because his wife is not a lady, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Benny Youngman did it much better, yeah. Brother.
take my Jawa wife, please.
Looky, looky, Civitan. There's a Jedi arriving.
I will sign no treaty, Senator.
I am the Senate.
This is the way.
So, we'll start at the beginning. At the beginning.
You need to say hello.
I don't know. Did you say hello? You guys get, I can't remember what's it called?
This is Delphi.
Little Britain in America.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a sketch in that. Hello, I'm a lady. never mind. Anyhow, so yeah, I just thought we'd just get into it. Do it how you like. So we are discussing the finale of The Mandalorian, and we are going to break it down bit by bit as much as I can remember roughly, and we will try to keep it as one man at a time. Best chat. Well, so we don't stop talking over each other too much. And so before the credits, or what we're going to call the credits, go up, we have Dr. Pershing being captured by, it was Boba, it was all of them, wasn't it? In the slave one ship. And then the little bragging of Alderaan, which I found a little bit disturbing the second time around, more than the first time around. And the sort of obnoxious Imperial pinets.
Yeah, that guy was odd.
Apart from one of them was quite, "I'm not with him." And didn't. Oh, it's a funny thing. He got shot in the back of the head and he sort of falls to the floor making noises. Then he goes, after he's been shot in the back of the head. Which is not a bit odd.
Well, I think those pilots, it's kind of post-Empire. So some of them, like the one guy's just there for the job. So yeah, he didn't have a death wish or didn't want any part of anything or whatever. Because they think they're pirates. They don't know that it's a bigger scheme until the Mando says something to the doctor to indicate that, you know, they have a history or something. And then the guy takes up arms, takes him as a human shield and, you know, gets into it a little bit more, realizes it's not just pirates. There's something else. There's something bigger at play here. And he's trying to save his own skin. But yeah, his interaction with, regarding Alderaan was intense. Yeah. And I had a question I had been being asked, haven't looked at whatever, that he asked, I was on that Death Star or whatever, and she says, "Which one?" And he says, "So you think you're funny?" And I got to admit, I don't know that I get what went on there in that conversation.
She's like, "Which one?" Because they both got destroyed. So yeah, like, right, trying to brag right about it.
And it was a joke, wasn't it? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what it was.
He wasn't actually on it, and she called him out.
No, he was on it. He was on the first one. Because he said he saw. Well, he said he saw.
But he got off.
Yeah, he got off.
Yeah. He was talking about.
He evacuated Alderaan in their moment of triumph.
Mm. Well, I think he's too young for Death Star 1.
Well, I was going to say that. What is the time difference here?
Death Star 1's probably only like maybe
5 years.
Ten years. 10 years at the most.
And actually, Death Star 1's the one that blew up Alderaan, so it had to have been that one.
Yeah.
I guess she was pointing out, or just otherwise making the, yeah, which one were you on? Because we blew up both, the good guys blew up both of them. So whatever, tough guy. I love the exchange, but I couldn't get my head around what they were trying to poke fun at.
I was waiting for him to say, like, I had friends on that Death Star, like the t-shirts.
Well, he did. He said something about thousands.
Yeah, he almost said it.
Thousands of
no, he said millions.
Millions,
he
said millions.
Yes. No, I thought it's good to. They've done that a few times in this Mandalorian series, and they reminded us of the cost on the other side and
the human cost,
their opinions and that kind of stuff. And it's good to get that reminder of, you know, millions of Imperials were killed as well.
You know, it's to your point, Stephen, with the Believer. That, you know, like you said, it touched on that too, you know, the human cost of galactic combat. I don't like being made to feel sympathetic to the bad guys, and they were clearly the bad guys, right? But when he shot that officer point blank and it went through his chest cavity and out the back, I felt that guy deserved it, as opposed to the troopers who were cheering that they finally got two of their colleagues made it through these weird ambushes that the local resistance kept conducting, you know? So when TIE fighters swoop in and they're blowing the heck out of these aliens, you know, you're like cheering for them. And the elation that we felt.
Yes, the previous episode, yes, I actually did feel that bit. I did feel a little bit of I don't want to say support for the Imperials. Well, I felt for them. You know, they were there, seeing all their shipments blown up and all that kind of stuff. And then these guys get through. It was a big deal, wasn't it? And it was great to see that other side of the fence, so to speak.
Yeah.
But anyhow. Yeah. But back to the finale sort of thing. Yeah. I mean, she shot that guy in the face, right next to the face of Dr. Pershing. I was expecting to see him with a bandage on the side of his head in the next scene, but you know, pretty okay compared to, I mean, what would his damages have been? Sores on his head, or his eardrum perforated, or I mean, looked pretty okay in the next.
He held his ear.
Yeah, he's holding his ear afterwards to kind of indicate the shot or whatever. But I think more the takeaway, from that was that caught me in the first time watching it and subsequent or whatever, is the Mando turns and gives her a look.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, you are a badass. You know, he learned something in that moment maybe about her. Or, you know, or wanted to learn something that there is, or realize there is something more he wants to learn about here whenever they get the chance to talk or whatever, because it was a pronounced, you know, great bit of helmet acting to turn and look at her to, like, wow, okay, that was intense type of scenario. Because it was, I mean, she had enough and didn't like him calling out the Alderaan and making light of what took place there. So yeah, that was,
I mean,
it was
a great start. How did they know that was the dropshooper?
Her arm, she's got the arm tattoos.
Oh, okay.
Indicated that, because I remember that from the earlier or first season, that they needed to cover that up. I don't recall.
She's still wearing the uniform? I didn't remember that. That's right. Yeah,
did we learn something new that the tear was related to Alderaan?
Yeah.
Or did we know that before?
There were, no. I think you're right about the tear being related to Alderaan, because that pilot says it. He's like, he calls her a dropper first, and then he says, yeah, I saw the tear, and he starts talking about Alderaan, which...
But we knew she was from Alderaan, from Moff Gideon's calling everybody out, right? Okay.
Yes.
So yeah.
I didn't think that was new, but I didn't recall if we had learned anything about the tear.
I don't think they had ever explained what exactly the tear stood for.
All right, so yeah, cool. That we got a little bit of closure, if you will, on that. That little piece. Yeah, it was a great start to the episode, obviously, with the Slave One firing away and coming on. You're like, all right, we're getting right into the action. There's no...
Well, out of all the ways I expected it to start, I didn't expect it to start with them kidnapping him. No. I mean, that you would have thought that they would have, you know, found the location of the freighter and then done some reconnaissance scans or get some charts off of that kind of freighter and then work out how to infiltrate it and all that kind of stuff. But yet, you know, they go and get him.
obviously they must have known that he was on his way from somewhere to somewhere else.
Yeah. My question about that is the pilot, the Imperial pilot, when he has Dr. Pershing and tells him, you know, do you know who this is? He's a high value target to the New Republic. Why is that? Why would the New Republic want him?
Well, there's a case. They must know about the cloning if he's a high value target.
I mean, yeah, is he a high value target just because
interesting.
He's important to them?
Is he what purpose? Is he a Galen Erso type? Where yeah, what purpose
would he serve the New Republic? Because they obviously must want him for something if he's that high value of a target.
Well, they're not hunting down Gideon. So I don't know.
That kind of stood out to me. I was like, why would he be a high value target for the New Republic? I mean, only to stop them from whatever they were doing, or is there something that they want to use him for?
Yeah, because like, he said if you kill him, the New Republic's gonna come for you.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So obviously they really want him. You know, they really need him for something, which I wonder what that could be.
I wanna venture that. Maybe the thing with Pershing is he's kind of like a Joseph Mengele type, you know, that the New Republic is Gideon, the reward for Gideon. And like Kara says, oh, well, if we bring him back alive, they're going to double the reward. So there does seem to be rewards being offered for these highly placed Imperials. I get the feeling that Pershing might have been doing some war crime type stuff in his effort to further the cloning technology, or maybe before cloning came, you know, he was studying cloning. Maybe he was doing some other hellacious stuff, you know. So I get the feeling that the New Republic wants to establish itself as bringing people to justice, and capturing Pershing would probably be a big public relations a coup for them, where look, this is one of the most feared and wanted Imperial experimenters of humans, and I would love to know Pershing's background, because he seems like a sympathetic person,
but yeah, we don't know anything about him.
Yeah,
well, maybe he has the death sentence on 12 systems.
like Dr. Evanzan. Yeah.
Ooh, maybe they work together.
Yeah, the thing with him, I always do get that sense that, you know, he was probably kidnapped by Gideon, you know, forced to work for him. Because he's always very willing to, you know, he wants to protect Grogu.
To help Mando.
And he's always, like, if Mando or whoever, you know, like, he's always willing, like, to help and just turn on the Empire. So yeah. I don't get the sense that he's not working for them by choice necessarily. You know,
that's what I suggest. Is he a Galen Erso type, where he's working for them but under duress of sorts? Right. So he's a top tier target of the Republic, and if they find out he's dead because of you guys, you pirates, you know, the Republic's going to be nobody's going to be happy because I think he was just trying to leverage anything he could to keep himself alive, that they realized these guys weren't Imperials. So if they're on the good guy side, you want to say, well, this is a, well, no, wait. Yeah, that's where it is confusing. If this is a target of the Republic and they find out he's dead because of you, it's going to have something to do with, right, trying to keep the pirates.
Maybe because
trying
the,
to save his own skin, so what he's talking.
Maybe because the Imperials don't have the forces. Like, if not, he would have said, like, well, if you kill him, then the Empire's going to come and get you. But they probably don't have the resources to go and hunt for this guy or even care, you know. So, you know, maybe, I mean, you got to think about it. Just like Galen Erso, they were part of the Old Republic, which were the good guys. So, I mean, they didn't necessarily change the regime changed. So, I mean, essentially, he could still be kind of, you know, considered good, but he was a scientist. So they probably need him for some stuff. So, yeah, like you said, like maybe they're trying to do the clone, you know, technology again.
Yeah.
And now it's the New Republic. They're trying to see, okay, who's still around from back and, you know.
It'd be very interesting if they are trying to do some cloning of their own in the background sort of thing.
you dissect it to this point, I told myself I wasn't going to say this phrase. This is where the show gets the pass. If he's that important of a target, why would he be flying in a Lambda class shuttle with absolutely no support around him whatsoever? You know, if he's that high value or whatever, he shouldn't be flying around by himself, kind of thing.
But why not an escort?
He was. So, you know, right. Such as it is, he was. So our guys were able to capture him.
And right now that you said that, that made me think maybe he's not really. Maybe that's just what this guy said to kind of get them to back off.
So exactly right. That was my point earlier. Right. He's just trying to save his own skin and find some way to get out of that situation.
Yeah. But you can't
take what Cameron, that guy says in that moment as the gospel as to what's going on here.
Yeah, but Kara would know if that was true or not. As soon as he said it, she would know.
The pilot.
I'd like to know more about him. He doesn't seem to. You can't read him very well. It's not like the minute he's helping them with the plan and that kind of thing. I didn't want to be with them anyway, Governor. I'm so glad you got me. Can you give me some? I'll help you, but can you give me some sort of a?
Or like they have my family kind of kidnapped or something. You know.
There's none of that.
Yeah.
He's a very quiet. He's almost like. It sort of reminds me a bit like Charlie from Lost. It's a bit like he's been on drugs sniffing or something like that. He's like very quiet and sort of
just keep looking at his nails.
Yeah. It's very well trimmed beard and hair and that kind of stuff. It's a strange character. We don't really know anything about him.
Not Penny's Starship.
But it's not Penny, not Penny's freighter. but it'd be interesting to know more about him. I don't know if we're ever going to see him again now after all this, but we shall see. Moving on, we roughly then get to Boba and Din entering the bar as everybody looks at the two Mandos, or not Mandos, as discussion goes on, enter the bar and look with some sort of interest. But then, of course, we said there's two other Mandos over the other end of the bar already drinking, happening. And then there's a little bit of a conversation, a bit of a slagging match, but for nothing really. But first thing I've thought about when there's the two, Bo-Katan and the other one, because we're going to keep saying that throughout this Senate, the other one. Where's the other one? Where's the third one? Where's the bloke? Did he not afford him?
Did he not make it when they did the freighter
job? He was still around, wasn't he?
No, he did. I wondered the same thing, but it wasn't.
He was in the refresher.
It's not the end of the world, but I'm just thinking about. Wasn't he there? I thought was he some? Maybe they couldn't. He was, double booked.
Well, somebody's got to be flying. Somebody. The ship that they captured and all that has to be. So I would kind of assume. That these two are off. You know, Mando didn't go back to where he originally found him. These two are off in a bar somewhere on some planet. We don't know that planet, right? That planet was new with the Three Mile Island smokestacks or whatever scattered across. We've never seen anything like that before, and we don't know where they were. I didn't see anything in the closed captioning that said what kind of planet they were on. Yeah. So that was on. Two are off at a bar somewhere. So they track him down in that sense. So that bloke could be, somewhere else. Obviously he's somewhere else.
I could have sworn. I could have sworn that was LaFalle.
That's what I said.
Where it was? Wasn't
there some sort of when they first popped in? Because
the fields and all that stuff they showed. Are they
so we have this conversation. We have this conversation. Bo-Katan says you're not a Mandalorian, and Boba says never said I was.
Yeah, that
but
was the best.
We showed that one up in the previous couple episodes that he was a Mandalorian.
His donor was.
It depends on the asterisk that is. What does it mean to be a Mandalorian? And the best part about that line was, is she, castingly says, "You're not a Mandalorian," and Fett says, "I never said I was." I loved that line from Fett.
It was a great conversation going on there.
It really was.
But is it like, is he talking about Mandalorian like in the like not spiritual sense, but like in their kind of honorable sense, like how they have their duties and their rules? Like Boba Fett doesn't care, he just does his own thing, but he has all the skills.
He's obviously got no love for it, has he? He says that basically calls it rubbish, waste of space.
I would love to know what's going on Mandalore right now, because the way he talks about Mandalore, he's like, you're gonna waste your time and go back there and fight for that? It's probably, like you said, rubbish. It's probably...
It's got to be a wasteland of some sort, isn't it?
It's got to be.
In Rebels, it was pretty much a wasteland. Like, they burned it.
He said, so somehow Fett, you know, we don't know, and we'll find out, and that's going to be a great story, whatever. But Fett says, you know, somehow he knows, so he hasn't been too isolated. He knows that Mandalore was turned to glass. He says the Empire turned that to turn that planet to glass or something to that extent, or whatever. So, to be Mandalorian has an asterisk around it that is, you know, what makes this show awesome and what's going to make that story awesome. And what makes that line by Fett, "I never said I was," so dripping with what, you know, so much information in there as to isn't he, does he believe he is, you know, what does it mean to be all of that, that is going to make for a great story as they continue to tell it to us.
Not to go off on a tangent, but do you guys know, okay, they had released that Clone Wars unfinished episode. I think they did at Celebration where they show how Boba got the dent on his helmet.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's dueling with, who's he dueling with?
Cad Bane.
With Cad Bane.
Yeah, Cad Bane. What's that planet supposed to be? Mandalore, maybe?
Well, I thought they were just on some outpost.
No, yeah, I don't think they...
I haven't seen...
Where that was.
Mm. Yeah, I haven't seen that one.
It's sort of like...
How do you get the... What do you shoot him with to make a dent in the helmet?
Right? Well, blood thrower.
Yes, given that, given later on, yes, exactly.
That doesn't make sense now.
You know, their explanation is that it's not full Beskar, that it's Durastil and Beskar, his helmet, you know?
Okay.
It did, Bo-Katan did indicate that, right? She says only the dark saber can be, deflected by only. Yeah, yeah. I like when he was like, just take it. Just take it.
You're getting your head
yourself.
Hold on.
Sorry.
We'll get there. Yeah, we'll get there.
I was thinking about the whole Bobo Mando thing now, because, you know, like I've seen some people say, wait a minute, you know, he just said he was a Mandalorian last episode, and I don't think he really did say he was a Mandalorian. He said his father
gave him the armor.
That's all he said, is that he basically inherited his father's armor. But I don't know if he implied or he said that, like, I guess his father considered himself to be a Mandalorian. You know, Jango considered it as a foundling, I guess. You know, not unlike Din. But I don't think that Boba...
say my father was a foundling, right?
Yeah, something. I can't remember.
Din
told him your father was a foundling then, you know. Then that's when he showed him the chain code and the whole thing.
Which is good enough.
So I don't think Boba really ever necessarily considered himself a Mandalorian. He wears the armor, but that's about it. So that's why when Bo-Katan tells him, you know, he never said he did. Yeah, he never did say that he did, you know, but I think other people kind of got mixed up with the whole conversation and the chain code and Django and the foundling thing, so they think he did, but in my opinion I don't think he ever did. He never said that, you know,
I need to see a transcript of that conversation. I think
I like the whole line of Bo-Katan. She's like, I know your voice, I've heard your voice, you know, thousands of times.
That was cool.
She was like, you think you're unique, but you're not. Yeah.
I'm going to ask a question, actually. Is Fett's armor Jango's armor that we saw in the movies physically the same thing?
That's supposed to be.
That's what he said.
Yeah, it's supposed to be, but it doesn't look the same.
Attached to it, yeah.
It's so important to him because he said it was his father's armor. So.
And then, I don't know my Fett lore, up on the chest plate where the, you know, the logo, the horse logo would be, the alligator logo would be, There's something electronic up there.
Yeah, I noticed that. Red lights and stuff.
Does anyone know what that is?
No. Oh,
so we have no Fett aficionados in the Senate.
I can tell you what it is from a piece of aesthetics. It's probably just some red LEDs behind some plastic.
No, I want to know the in-universe.
What's the purpose?
Three AAA batteries.
Because the Marshal had it, and one point in time, there was one scene in when we see the Marshal with it, where it's like really on and really got numbers or something going on there, and I just, you know, just
and
wondered.
That was the first time I ever noticed that.
Yeah, likewise.
I had never noticed that in the OT.
Yeah, it's glad I brought it up. Always...
That's where I first noticed it as well, but was so afraid to show my ignorance to Fett to ask the question back then as to what was that. But obviously, not all of us are well versed on our Fett lore. We don't have any Mando hiding in the sand.
They're highlighting different things about the armor this time, just like the knee rockets. Like I had always seen those, but he had obviously never used them. And I wasn't even clear exactly what they were. So when he fired them, I was like, aha, okay, that's what that
now
is.
Now I know.
Yeah. But,
There's a friend of mine belongs to Mando Mercs, and they routinely incorporate that LED readout. It looks like it's two slots cut into the armor, and behind it there's some kind of a readout. I think the armor they made for Andy Gutierrez had that feature on it. I can do some research and post it in the group later.
You can't look at it yourself though, can you? Not easily.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's meant to be visible.
Trying to read that.
Yeah,
I mean, it can project out maybe like a projection screen so they can watch TV.
Yeah, I didn't know he had a holo projector on his gauntlet.
That's how he watches the circus thing from the holiday special.
Yeah, I like that. So continuing on with that scene, I like the fight scene with him and her where he does the wrist, the Spider-Man thing, and she's not having any of it. She's holding her own. It wraps around her arm or whatever, but she's holding her own, and he has to strain to be pulled. It's a good fight, and it shows that Fett is equaled a little bit by her to some extent. And I just enjoyed the fight scene that he didn't go in there and completely take over, that he got a little bit of comeuppance as well.
It's a little bit like an old man, didn't he, compared to
certainly
in that one.
It was
a great scene between them. It's just a wonderful thing to watch.
Just fire, repel, fire then. Is that the thing?
Apparently, yeah.
That was interesting.
It's like paper, rock, scissors, isn't it? That was, isn't it? Both fire. Oh, no, we both drew. Okay, so moving on, we skipped over the plan and that kind of stuff. So the plan starts with the hyperspace in and the slave again attacking the shuttle as they head towards the freighter. And as I said before in the chat, Gideon lets them in, despite the fact it very much Bo-Katan's voice saying, there's land. And they sort of squeeze in into the hangar bay, which seems to launch right through the front.
I'm skipping the plans.
But you can talk about
if anybody knows the word biovac or
bivouac.
I posted that in the chat. I was dumbfounded by that. I was like, wow, is that a made up word? And it's a truly legit word. I have since learned, I've been educated, but wow, that was a neat piece.
Yeah, when I was doing my military stint, bivouac is basically when you go out in the field and set up camp. So I don't know why they use a French word, but it's a weird way of asking about these droids. I guess she was thinking.
Well, she was military to some extent, so it kind of shows. I think it speaks to her character's background that she would use such a term or whatever when they're flying through hyperspace. Was anybody not taken out of it when they're flying through hyperspace and they're in the same tunnel following each other? Was that weird? Is that how hyperspace works?
It was weird, but I think they did that in Rebels.
They did on Rebels.
And seeing each other.
Is it something like that they sink each other's ship up so that they can jump together, I guess? That we don't
jump and come out, but they didn't come out. Hyperspace is so dangerous and doing it or whatever that you can't be the Blue Angels flying wingtip to wingtip in hyperspace. It needs to be for visually, it needs to be for the layout so that they know that both traveling through hyperspace and going.
Wasn't there an episode of Rebels where they had a tracker on the Ghost or on the other ship, the Phantom, and then they had to like drop it out of hyperspace?
They popped out while it was flying. It was a little strange stuff, but still very cool, whatever. And skipping ahead and getting to that scene, the one thing that I remarked and just thought was awesome was they talked about, you know, as they're in hyperspace, she says, all right, make the shots look convincing. Yeah. You know, here's a plan. We'll go. As soon as the Slave One drives out of hyperspace, he's on the trigger. You know, there's hesitation. Yeah. As soon as that thing is on screen and drops out, it's on the trigger. It's just like, wow, that was cool. It was very visually entertaining for sure.
I like the conversation again between her and Boba. You know, you're just concentrating on what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
make them look convincing.
Yeah, Ewan doesn't like her really that much, does he? But he's all for his code and his honor, I suppose, when it suits him and that kind of stuff that he fondles with the pan. I would say, like, we don't want to skip ahead one minute, but I think the Boba Fett series is going to be a completely different ball game, isn't it, compared to Din and his mandate.
I think that's the only way they can make another Mandalorian show work. He has to be the polar opposite of Din. I felt so bad for Din, man. It's like he's almost been a witness to his own adventure in these last two seasons. You know, he's very relatable, and I keep thinking about him as just a babe in the woods. He's now being exposed to all these things and this different mentality and good versus evil, the ambiguity of right versus wrong, the morality. And all. He's just such a fish out of water, and everybody that he comes into contact with, they look at him like, where'd you get this guy? You know, he's just so
he's really wide-eyed and kind of gullible, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Gullible for someone who's such an awesome fighter and who has this clarity of purpose. He always seems like he's like, here, just take it. Just why can't you just take it?
Yeah, so you're extrapolating and or projecting a lot because of the armor to the armor. You know, the individual inside of there and what his morals and what his beliefs and all that is to the individual and not to the armor, but project a lot on it because it's Mandalorian armor. So everybody you tend to assume or think project on it. And that's what's fun about the show and the character development is to, you know, there's somebody in the armor and Fett is Fett and he's badass and Din is Din that he's moral compass or otherwise, some character development into it all really challenges it. This light cruiser that we've seen, have we seen that somewhere? That it only has like the one launch tube.
It's the same modified.
Shuttle could dock or where the
pilot. Suddenly gone Battlestar Galactica, isn't it?
The launch tube.
The launch tube and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Was it for launching TIEs only? Because it didn't look like that shuttle fit in there.
That was, I think it did because, she came in hot. And that was my question about the light shuttle. And if anybody knows the ship, that's the only place that ships can land, you know, come and go. So, because they tell her to stay away from the launch tube, we're going to launch TIEs. So that's kind of what I'm asking her to confirm if we see her, that was the only place they can come and go any other ships in and out of it. And so that's why they said, we're coming in. And they said, we'll stay away from the launch tube. We're going to launch some TIEs.
There must be somewhere else. They can come in. That's just the launch tube. So there's only one that only goes in one direction, or it's supposed to.
That's a good point. Yes.
You know, but I'm sure there's another way they can.
So we think there's somewhere else that you're supposed to come in.
Yeah.
Let me.
They told her stay away from that. You know, you're going to come in and I don't have time. I have to.
That's why I'm asking you, because they specifically said stay away from it. And I'm like, you really, they only have the one way in one docking, but it's a light cruiser. It's a small cruiser. It's a small.
Yeah. No, I'm sure they had another. I'm sure they had another entrance. But that's the launch tube. That's like you only get launched from there. You don't enter.
The exit only.
Yeah.
There was.
Yes. It was like that in Battlestar Galactica. They launched out one end, didn't they? And they land in the other end.
Yeah.
It's funny. I made the observation actually, Ron, are you into the ships? Because you're making these observations about the starships that I'm like, yeah, that's right, that's true. In the last episode with where they took Baby Yoda, the Dark Troopers deployed from a port in the side of the ship, so maybe. But I'm thinking that's also where Mando blew them out of the yes. Yeah, I think that might be just for them because Mando was able to open a bulkhead and blast them out into space.
Yeah, that was small. Yeah, they're not ships, so they could jump just about out of anywhere. And to that point, somewhere later, our heroes cross some
bridge,
traditional imperial bridge with no guardrails over top of a ray shielded hull. What the heck? I mean, it made for a great visual scene, but what was that all about?
It was open, because that stormtrooper fell right into outer space.
It's a docking. Maybe that bridge retracts or something, and it's not always. And it could be a place to dock or a ship could get. But it's just a weird thing. But it made for, again, visual effects and a great story of them getting trapped and almost getting it.
I wonder if there's going to be a Mando visual guide kind of book, because that would be pretty awesome, wouldn't it?
It's got to be something to explain what that was about, because we can't be the only ones.
What an odd bridge to have.
But yeah, just the whole heist, the whole getting to the bridge, getting to the child kind of thing was just sheer entertainment, just good stuff. Her weapon failing. I love that. I'm sure everybody did, but
you've
been listening to the podcast, but there's been speculative rumor that maybe this was her last season because of something she said and the way she was talking about how I've had a blast and it was fun. So did any of that factor into anybody else's as her guns not firing and stuff? We were like, oh, she's going to get it because of hearing that stuff on podcasts. I was in that mindset. I was like, oh, no, maybe that. And I don't like be taken out of things like that because of hearing stuff, speculative type stuff like that or whatever. But I definitely had that thought at some point. It's just like, oh, maybe there is some truth to that. Watch her closely. She might not make it.
I know there was some backlash recently about some comments she made, but I don't think it ever really got much traction. It didn't really blow up into anything. So yeah. I honestly didn't. No, I didn't even.
Didn't pay it.
That didn't even phase my mind, to be honest.
I didn't think anybody was going to get it. I mean, this is the kind of show a bit where generally everybody successfully, doesn't it? But having said that, people have died.
Ask Quill how he feels about that.
Last
year we lost quite. We had a few tear jerkers, didn't we?
I kind of did think somebody might die, but I kind of thought maybe it would be Sasha Banks's character. What's her name? Posca. The other Mandalorian, I thought, she's kind of one that's sort of expendable.
Yeah. Quite
so a, I thought maybe they would kill her off, but they didn't.
Well, probably the only one is expendable, really, isn't it? Of all of them. When you think about it.
She seems less,
Fennec could go as well, but, Fennec's cool character and Fett's sidekick to some extent, so you wouldn't really want to see her go. But, yeah, her losing her gun and going around and the fight scenes were odd. They were funny, but they would like do a karate kick or something to a stormtrooper and get him to the ground and then shoot him. And it just seemed like, why not just shoot him first? Why hit him in the head and stun him and all that and then have to shoot? But again,
did you guys notice most of the time when they shot the troopers, they were shooting them like in between the armor? Like, I thought that was a nice touch. It made it seem like they weren't so weak. Like, the blaster bolts all went through like the neck or like the shoulder.
But they also would shoot them once, or
I noticed that every shot that Gideon made was between the armor to Bo-Katan. He just like let, and she somehow lived. So
will you wait till we get there?
Yep, they're doing very well at thinking ahead.
I thought this was relevant to the point.
Yes, well, you're definitely getting to the point. But let's concentrate on the. I mean, they really set up the Death Troopers. They had to, I suppose, with that one against Din, in terms of how deadly they were and how much he couldn't do much against them.
Yeah, he could much damage to
them. It had to be for what was coming up. But they seriously kicked. One of them kicked arse.
Well, shows how strong that helmet is, whatever. But I wondered.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Just
very cool visual where he lights the fire flame gauntlet part of his, bat symbols, or whatever. Just the fire coming up through the dark trooper as he turns his head was very.
So is the visor on the helmet made of Beskar too? Because shouldn't it
the
have
glass cracked? The glass bit?
Yeah.
Could have cracked.
Correct.
Yeah.
It wasn't actually hitting that bit, was he not? I don't know.
Yeah,
he was. Well, he's square in the nose, so you kind of, to Ricky's point, there's definitely.
That seems to be the.
They're not firing
guns.
That's
a good point. It should have cracked.
You would think, anyway, but it was kind of giving, or as he was getting knocked into. I'm just not sure, quite sure why the Dark Trooper stopped. You know, because he hit the pipe. You know, why did he was punching him, and then all of a sudden he kind of stops. And
why isn't that when he put the flames on him? And that's what made him stop.
Worried
about it. He burned away.
Then I got flashbacks of General Grievous in that part.
Yeah.
He burned away all the plastic parts. He could, like Ron said, there's a neck seal that goes between the torso and the helmet. And when Mandalorian lit him up, you could see, even after the flames had ended, you could see the neck seal disintegrating. It looked like a ring of fire just kind of disintegrating down towards the.
So that's how he was able to stick the hole in there.
Well, it's a droid. So. Is there a need for a neck seal? You know what I mean? I see what you're saying. If it was a person,
rubber parts, I guess,
or just whatever makes it work.
You gotta protect the wires, if you know.
Yeah. Right. All right.
What was the deal with all the I don't know what you call it, piping that came off of them, and it was like almost like liquid going into them. Was that just fuel? Was that what they were?
Yeah,
trying to
that was strange, like a cryogenic.
I was trying to work out why do these droids need to be powered up for a minute?
Yeah.
Beforehand, and all other droids don't really seem to have a problem with this.
Unbeatable, and so they gotta have limits. They gotta give them limits.
Sure, right. There's got to be something to the storytelling aspect, and we've got to have some way to. Because if they were immediately available, as soon as the ship lands, you deploy them. But right. So what's our in-universe explanation as to why they need to be powered up? And it just because they can't.
They suck too much power.
Yeah, apparently. I think just because of how powerful they are, they require a lot of energy.
Yeah, there was a comment, I think Fennec said, when they were going through the plan and they had the hologram of the cruiser up, Fennec said something about they've got to be biovac'd into something. There was a term that they used.
Bivouac'd.
What does that
even
mean?
Yeah, we talked about that before you came.
Well, that's just where they're located. But yeah, they did talk about that. Powered up, but Steven just wanted to blow right through the plan part of the thing. So we
I didn't think there was much to say about that.
Only the
only scene that had dialogue in it.
Too much talk.
The meat of the show, one scene, like Ricky said, that had all the dialogue. Yeah, we're just gonna blow right through.
People
that.
Start talking, and Steven checks out.
Give me the action.
Just blow something up.
To the original question of something to the piping, connected to them, and when it disconnects and the hissing, is that how they power up? Is through a power gap? Maybe it was a coolant system to keep.
Yeah,
I thought they said something about a coolant system. I don't know.
That makes sense.
That could make
sense. Did you guys notice that? Those pipes that we're talking about, those tubes that kind of automatically disconnect when they're fully charged, they weren't connected to anything. It was almost like a magnetic connection to the breastplate because there isn't a nozzle or a female connector. It's
so like a grease fitting type of thing that was right. To, right. It was a solid plate basically.
It was just attached to the armor and it came off without any marks.
Well, I guess it's like charging your phone, and you just put it down the little pad.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. Like, wow, that's...
But it probably generates heat, which is why you need the coolant thing to kind of keep it cooling while it's charging. Yeah. Okay. There we go, we figured it out.
Well, because when they show the diagram of how many there are, when they're looking through the plans and the scene that Steven wanted to skip over, there's like the little red dots like in the middle of every... Of every Dark Trooper. Like, that's the heat point. So, and there was about, 40 of them in there or more from looking at that readout that they had.
I could share the screen on these things. Was there 40 in there? So I tried to count them before, because I was doing
that.
He said
there's a platoon.
Yeah, there's a lot.
A platoon is usually... It's 24 guys.
Yeah.
To me, it looked like there were more when they flew back in.
Yeah.
There were when they got, you know, sucked out. Because I was like, were they double or triple stacked in those things? Because it didn't look like there was that many. But then when they were flying in, there was all these red dots. I'm like, what the?
There's definitely some numbers off there. If you go back and look at it, because I had the same sort of thought as to what flew out of there, what we've seen walking, what we saw flying back in.
Yeah.
So maybe there was another bivouac, something.
Was it, I was going to say, was there symmetry to it? So you had that bridge with the force field across, and you see when you look at that shot, there's actually two lots of those dark troopers coming up to that bridge on either side of the ship. So I kind of wonder if there was some symmetry to, like you said, there was a second chamber for those guys. I wonder.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
You would think, though, he would have to hit the release to, you know, there would be a release to each one, not one release that does both, but we'll figure out how. Somehow he did it, right? We all saw it.
So, I mean, going back to the last time when they were on the, I can't remember the name of the planet, and they infiltrate that Imperial base, and you see the messed up experimental clone thingy. And you
Chapter
see
14.
You see a bit of the Death Troopers. I got really confused. I thought the M count and all that cloning stuff and stuff was also related to the Dark Troopers.
Mm.
But it seems that it's not. They are just droids. There's nothing about a clone person inside them. But then Dr. Pershing says something about, you know, these are third generation. We've eliminated the need for a person. Or whatever, but I mean,
in the Dark Forces comic, not Dark Forces game, there are three phases. Phase three Dark Trooper is just a robot. I think phase two was a type of armor, and phase one was an armature. But I also remember, and this is what I thought they were going to do, is in the game Dark Forces. The guy who runs the Dark Trooper program is able to get into the armor of Dark Trooper, and you fight him. He's the last boss. So you fight him. I thought that Gideon's armor, the way it matches up with the Dark Troopers, they were going to have a moment where he steps in. But
that would have been good.
So when they take the bridge, the female Imperial that has been in a couple of episodes that we think is tied to some other video game franchise or something, whatever, she doesn't make it, right? They literally killed everybody on the bridge. Yeah. That she was an interesting character for a couple of episodes.
Yeah,
comes back in Star Wars. So yeah, she could have hid somewhere, done something. She was just an interesting character, interesting actress.
She comes back in a future episode. Just a scratch.
Tis a scratch.
There was a rumor that she was going to be a Sabine in as a plant on that bridge. I thought that would have been kind of interesting, but a little bit convoluted.
Convoluted for sure.
Yeah.
I think she the way Gideon talked about our heroes, he's like, they're probably up there slaughtering every person in my ship, including that female second officer that we as an audience got to know. She didn't seem like a bad person. She was doing a job. So Gideon was with true disgust. He was like, they are probably slaughtering my entire crew.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they did. And
savages are there or something.
That is crazy.
All these Remnants guys are all true believers, though, so they're pretty much like...
Yeah, they're still here.
You know, there's nothing that can convince them that they're the bad guys. No. You know?
Right.
Everybody else, as soon as the big bosses are gone, they just said, that's it, I'm off. I'm leaving the Imperial
army.
I'm off to see it the rest of my life.
That's an interesting point, though, because that was a common theme through a couple of these episodes in this season of you're seeing the other side of it. So you talk about that where Gideon is, you know, saying savages. And then you had the Imperial pilot on the shuttle. He was like, he was talking about Alderaan and you terrorists kill millions. Right. They were really putting it in your face, like, this is, there's two sides here to this. And, you know, it's not as clear cut as the movies probably have made it out to be. But yeah, and even back to the Mayfeld episode, I mean, that was, again, more of the kind of same. There's two sides to this. And I just thought that was an interesting thing to throw in there.
Yeah, and it's more of a modern
it is.
Kind of trope. Yep. to make the enemy human, right? Or to
it put, is. Yep.
To put yourself in their perspective, because I know back during the OT, that was not, you know, things were black and white. It was like you were good or you were bad, you know. But now in more modern times,
You don't get that in World War II films, do you, as well? World War II films. It's always Germans are totally the baddies. And,
but like the whole premise of the prequels, though, was kind of to humanize like the worst villain in the entire galaxy. So, I mean, I can see why they're trying to go, you know, kind of that route to give you the opposite side.
I'm going to say this, and, you know, I like the modern thinking. I like showing that it's not all black and white. There's also gray, and people do things for a reason. The problem that I have with the trend is that if you humanize the villains and you show that they're just the hero of their own story, which I don't believe, is that now the heroes, the actual heroes, the ones that are fighting for good.
We're all rooting for Boba Fett, and he's a bad guy. So,
I didn't trust
the 70s or since the 80s, you know.
I thought Boba Fett was going to turn on Mando, and oddly enough, Mando was the one who was willing to make a deal with Gideon. And if Gideon hadn't tried to cut his legs out from under him, he would have made the deal, and he would have left Bo-Katan and even Kara. He would have been like, look, you guys, I'm throwing you to the wolves. So,
and I think they would have been fine with it, because their whole mission was just to rescue the kid. So if he can get the kid off, then they'll all, you know, do whatever
the kid
they
need and the saber and the dark saber. She
wanted the saber, and they wanted the ship. It was a bonus part or whatever. And to your Alex's point, whatever, in that scene where he finds Moff Gideon with the child, whatever, Gideon's in there monologuing or whatever, and the Mandalorian's like, you know, where's this going? I just want the kid. You know, he says drop your weapon. He puts a weapon down, kicks it over. You know,
no problem.
No question, whatever. It's just give me the kid. And Moff Gideon's, like I say, is monologuing like a bad guy does, and the man was like, you know, where's this going? Hurry up, let's get to the point where I get the kid and you get whatever.
We've only got 39 minutes already.
Yeah, he's not interested.
That was a great scene of and really I bought it that the Moth was gonna walk with a
me
kid
too. Yeah.
Right up until he
but did you buy the fact that Mando would just take the kid and go, or did you think that because I did not buy that Gideon was going to let him walk.
I thought he was.
I also didn't buy that Mando was like, just give me the kid, I'll give you the saber, and then I didn't buy that either. You know, I thought they were both playing each other.
Do you think Mando cared an S about the saber at that point?
No, I don't think he cared about the saber, but I think he knew that by just giving it to him and then just taking off with Grogu, like I didn't think he was going to just leave the others, you know, to fend for themselves, kind of.
Yeah,
you
know, I don't know that I thought he was going to leave them, but
he didn't care about the saber, like that much I knew, but the saber kind of. Like, if he left them with the saber, well, then, you know, you leave the bad guy armed, and of course he's very resourceful.
And the only one
he's gonna put his friends in danger. So that's kind of more like I didn't believe that he would.
Well,
just kind of
Dan kept saying, like, just get me. She kept saying, just get me to the ship and leave me to Gideon. It's like,
I don't care what happens.
But she never explained why, obviously.
But Cara Dune, like, I don't believe like he would have just left her. I mean, like, he brought her into this. You know what I mean? She kind of volunteered to help him, and then he wasn't going to just ditch her. You know, the other ones, he may not have had any loyalty to them, but I think to Kara, he does. You know,
this is the thing. At that moment, when he goes into the brig and he sees Grogu, like, you know, please help me. The only one holding all the cards is Gideon. If he, you know, Mando had his Beskar spear. But at that point, you know, he dropped his weapon. He was, and Gideon broke it down. He's like, I know that you've used up all your wrist rockets. I know that all your tricks are you know, you're out of tricks.
Still got 101 other weapons on him, basically. Anyway.
Well, he has.
Yeah, right, I think what sells the Mando on it.
They both just knew that they were not going to let the other, regardless of what they were saying, that was kind of like their negotiation to get the other one to drop their guard. You know,
I think they both
ultimately knew that they were going to end up, you know, fighting it out. I think
Gideon admits, he says, I got what I wanted from the child. I got what, there was nothing more that the Mando wanted. The Mando didn't care about Gideon, didn't want to kill him, doesn't need him destroyed. He just wants the child.
Yeah. So
Gideon says, all right, you can have him. I've gotten what I need from him, whatever. And all, you know, and it's again, monologuing, whatever. He doesn't care. He just wants the child. I don't know that I thought he was just going to leave his, you know, everybody that he came with, but his mindset, his focus, his one thing that he needed to do was get that child in his possession.
But it's almost like that fable about the scorpion and the frog. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, he helped him and then he still stung him. Why? Because it's his nature. You know, Mando gave him the saber and he still was gonna, you know, kill them both. Why? Because it's his nature.
Let's say that. What's the end game? Let's say Mando walks out, says, "I'm gonna take the child, and you can leave." What he basically negotiated with Gideon, who had his child at knife point, and he enjoyed that, holding the sword, the saber over his head. He's like, you could see the light was glowing off of Grogu's head, and. So Mandalorian put down his weapon. He had the Beskar spear, but the reaction time to pull out that spear. What I'm trying to say is that if Mando had taken the baby and let Gideon to his own devices, would Gideon have gone up to the command the conning tower and just finished off these guys, or would he have gotten in a ship and run?
I'm surprised he didn't go.
That's another way to look at it, is like, was Gideon saying, give me the, you know, we'll do the trade, but then you go, but you meaning all of you, not just you two, all of you leave and don't come back, you know what I mean?
He knows that's not going to happen because Bo-Katan
Shot her specifically for a reason.
So, I mean, we kind of been... took it at face value that it was just you, Mandalorian, leave my ship and get...
That's...
But maybe he meant you and your crew, you know, all of you get out of here. And
that's
know.
Fair.
I was thinking he went into that cell purely because he knew how it would go. He would be defeated, and then it would be he would have outwitted Bo-Katan. I think that was his only desire.
He didn't wait on the command in the bridge for a reason. He knew what she was after. He knew who was. I guarantee you, he's on that bridge watching the footage, the cameras that that our crew was watching when Special Man showed up, but.
But he'd rather die any other way than have Bo-Katan take him out.
Right. And get the there's definitely a grudge because he could have shot anybody. And he wanted to kill her.
It's like he put himself in the brig on purpose with the child because he knew that it would be Mando that would come after him to get the child, right? He's going to come to the child. So basically, he kind of knew there was one of two. It was going to be one of two outcomes. Either he beats Mando and still gets to keep the saber, or Mando beats him and Mando gets the saber, but
Bo-Katan does not.
But then Bo-Katan does not get the saber. So either way, Bo-Katan doesn't get the saber.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And that was clearly evident when they make their way to the bridge and she's like, what happened? And
yeah, she's like, what happened?
And Moff Gideon's with the smile, with the S-eating grin on his face going, oh, well, you know, a funny thing you should ask. He bested me, and so he has it. Why don't you just get it from him now?
When he tells him, oh, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
That do was you a, think...
fun bit of dialogue.
Do you think those handcuffs that Grogu are wearing are NT Force repellent or something? Because that should not be much of a handicap for anyone.
No, with force they're powers. They're not, because he had them on, didn't he? When or no, he didn't. But I don't know. Maybe I kind of don't think they are. I just think they're just so his hands don't move around.
But to the point of the question you're asking is, why doesn't Grogu? Why can't Grogu use the force?
He seems drowsy.
He does, and he keeps tiring himself out.
I think he was still recovering.
Stormtroopers in there.
That's what my
force choke, and then he burns himself out.
That's where my head went to when I asked that question of myself. Is like, they just keep sending things in there to threaten him.
True.
And Gideon is smart enough.
You don't use the handcuffs on it.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question about the handcuffs.
That's just meanness. That's just to be mean.
It's because he was trying to take all the knobs off the ship, so they had to.
I love baby manacles.
I love when Grogu senses when the X-Wing comes through and his ears perk up and his head turns. Yeah. I just love that. That was amazing. And especially too when he actually sees a figure on the camera and he puts his little hand up to the thing and it's just like, oh my God, I'm melting here, right? Like, this is just amazing. And then,
before we get to that, I'm curious of you. I didn't know where it was going to end. You know, in terms of there were a number of scenes where it could have been the cliffhangered aspect of the what's going to come, you know, to be continued next season, whatever kind of thing. Did anyone else look? I didn't look to see the timeline, so I didn't know how much time was left, which was great. I highly recommend that's the way to watch it, because if you know, there's only 2 minutes left. All right, this has to wrap up quickly. To me, it ended like this is going to be the end scene. This is going to be the end scene, and it just kept going and kept going, get dramatic. So I wondered if anyone else
stay away from the timestamp. There was that one cutaway where they show Gideon covering the blaster. And it already seems like things are wrapping up, sort of. And
yeah, exactly.
You know, he has got the blaster, so then I thought, okay, he's gonna kill somebody right now. And then I kept thinking it's probably gonna be that one character, the other Mandalorian. Koska. But do you think that was the only kind of thing that made me think it was gonna end one way, but it didn't.
Do you think the Death Troopers were programmed by a boxer? Because that seems to be their go-to thing. But yeah, punch the windows to get out of that thing, punch the Mando's helmet, and then punch the blast doors. That seems to be their go-to.
Well, it's going to be
their third generation, man. And all they can think of
what else are they going to do? It's going to be their close quarters, hand-to-hand combat programming. Yeah. Is to capture or to hold it and punch or.
Huh. What makes the inside combat inside?
They were really, really robotic. Like compared to when you watch Clone Wars, and there's like the assassin droids they had that would jump around, and the commando droids, I guess.
These had a lot more of a Terminator feel to them.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
When they were gonna punch through to the bridge, and they had to punch through the double blast doors, where I was like, oh God. Get comfortable, because this is going to take a while.
Yeah, I was the same way. Punching? How's punching?
I was like, they'll probably get through, but, anybody have a sandwich or something?
I was surprised, Ron keeps pointing out, I was surprised, and this is one of those things that Star Wars nerds notice. I didn't expect the blast doors to open. I mean, they wrecked the mechanism, right? These two stupid...
Oh, yeah.
Those doors should not have opened.
To go back to the question about was anyone looking at the time and stuff, I wasn't, but I will say I kind of felt that it wasn't until my second viewing that I could really sit back and enjoy it, because the whole while, this Jedi is coming through and my family's there with me and is like, is it Ahsoka? Is it Ezra? Is it? And I'm just like, I'm so pent up for it to be Luke. And I'm just like, I can't enjoy this until I know it's Luke. So I just had to let it go through. Like I said, it wasn't until I saw the black glove. And even then I was like, I don't know. Are they really going to do this? Right. And are we gonna cut away at the last second? But it took me second viewing before I could just sit back and say, okay, I'm okay. Yeah. I can relax here.
I will agree. I did enjoy it more in the second viewing. That
I just kept saying, Luke, 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 it's Luke. It's Luke. I didn't really watch the scene.
What I'm interested in here is that why? Who is controlling the Death Troopers? Why do they suddenly stop when an X-wing enters the hangar bay? And they stop the door. They all turn around. They're all interested in that. So who's telling the Death Troopers what to do and what to be? What's their target?
I feel like they just felt like it was an easier target to get to. Somebody's coming in, you know. So that's easier. That person, whoever that is, that they're not protected. So let's get them. These guys, we got to bust through two glass doors to get to them. Yeah. So let's get whoever the reinforcements are.
I think threat priority is some a new challenger appears. You know, these guys are holed up and they're in there to rescue Gideon. Or they're going after trying to rescue Gideon.
At the door? I mean, the ones in the hangar bay might turn around. And,
okay,
why are the ones at the door? What did they all stop at the same time, pretty much, didn't they? And then concentrate on what was coming in through the hangar bay.
Do we know if they're like a hive mind?
That's where you have to go, right? As cool as they are and as Death Troopers as they are and as strong and awesome, right, they are still a third generation, but a first generation droid or whatever, that they have a programming mindset that is the whatever. So yeah, it's the hive mentality. And like it was said, that now all of a sudden this thing's there's behind closed doors, whereas this threat is now real behind us on our flank. We're going to have to deal with it right away. You know, they don't know what it is, but how do they know an X-Wing landed and how many it is or anything like that? But still, it's a very cool
So when did the penny drop for everyone? Was it the X-Wing? Was it the kind of the lightsaber? Was it the glove?
To Steven's point, I'd like to go around the horn. I'd love that aspect of Star Wars, and I want to hear everyone's when did the penny drop for you? As this scene that we all know and unfolds talks about, I want to hear everyone's take from the X-Wing to the green saber piece of how.
Well, I can say for me, it wasn't the X-Wing. The X-Wing didn't do it for me. The first thing I was thinking, here comes Filoni. It's the New Republic.
The other guy. The New Republic Marshal.
Yeah, that's what I first thought.
I thought that's who it was because that was my first initial thought was, okay, it's this guy. But then I thought, wait a minute, it's not gonna be him, right? And then you see the robe, and then I was like, oh, is that Ahsoka? No, that's not gonna be Luke, is it? You know, and then you see the black glove, and then I still kind of was like, no. But you know, when it was for me is when I saw his hilt, his Return of the Jedi hilt.
Yeah.
Not even before, but once the green blade came out, I was like, boom, that's it, that's Luke.
It was pointed out to me that Ezra's lightsaber was also green, but that wasn't the first thought.
It was the hilt. The hilt is very distinctive. Yeah. His Return of the, as soon as I saw that was it. And then of course the green blade comes out, and then by then you're like, okay, it's Luke.
I wasn't completely sure until I saw the glove, because to start off with, I was thinking that hood is very puffy and sticking out the side. That could still be Ahsoka. But obviously, when you see the green lightsabers, like it's not going to be, she's not going to trade in her two white lightsabers for the green one. Yes.
So I watched it, and with the X-Wing, I was soaking it all in and didn't think much of what or who it could be. It was just, Kara says, you know, what's great, one X-Wing. I was like, yeah, what's one X-Wing? How's that going to help? Didn't really think of who it was going to be or whatever. And then, you know, seeing the video, the security camera, grainy black and white video, I was taken out of it just a little bit. I'm like, oh, that's how they're going to do this. They're going to show us this, but we're never really going to see who it is, and you know, we'll speculate all season long, whatever. But then it goes on, and somebody says a Jedi, and Moff Gideon's face just drops to no end, ever. And he's still swinging, whatever. And they show I'm going to get emotional talking about it. They show the hooded figure, and you're like, you know, I watched it alone for the first time, and I was mouth agape because I couldn't believe what they were doing, what the creatives were about to give us. I wasn't quite sure yet. And when you see that green saber, it was, holy cow, are they really doing this? And he goes on and on, does his thing. And when he finally pulls his hood back, holy crap, I lost. It was such, I put this in the chat. I can't, you know, I don't take much for the reaction camera video things or whatever. Because I think people kind of ham it up, but I was just so mouth agape, taken aback that the creatives told that story. They did that. They brought Luke into the mix and showed us what everybody wanted out of the sequel trilogy. I'm not a basher of the sequel trilogy. I flip and love them. But for them to find a way to give the fans the Luke that we all know and love and wanted was just amazing. Absolutely loved it. And yeah, it was just an incredible thing to see and have that emotion wash over you watching a flipping TV show is incredible.
Really, I need a box of tissues now.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's amazing. I don't appreciate art. And for someone to create something like that, to create emotion in you like that, I'm a very
it's episode 6.5. Yeah, you know, the show is episode 6.5. Yeah. This is what, you know, you need this in between stuff. Like, and it's awesome that they can do that. And everyone, I mean, I haven't heard anybody knock this episode yet. So, I mean, it's something universal that, I mean, Luke talks to everybody. He's the main character of the whole, you know, series, you know, of Star Wars. It's his adventures. So just to see him, and, you know, it does hit you right there. You know,
I instantly go to my 8-year-old nephew and I texted, as soon as it was over, I texted my brother-in-law and I said, please tell me you haven't been spoiled. And if you haven't seen this episode yet, I want to watch it with you guys or whatever. And he texted me back that they had watched it that night. And he said his wife was in tears. His mouth was agape and his son was just eyes glued to the TV, soaking it all in. I was like, yes, you know, that's the exciting aspect, that there's families that get that kind of thing or whatever, that get this. Because like you said, Ricky, Luke is the through line for a lot of, for everything through Star Wars or whatever. And so for them, for a new generation of fans that have the Rey and have all that sort of stuff, but for them to see Luke do his thing, you know, he wasn't sure it was Luke. So I finally did get to watch it last night with my daughter, her first time watching it, whatever. And she, you know, I knew it was exciting, didn't say anything to her, whatever. She's watching it, and when the lightsaber pops green, she's like, Ahsoka's lightsaber's not green. And I said, in broken voice, I said, no, sweetie, no, it's not. And then she was like, oh, no way. And then, you know, it washes over her and she realizes what's being witnessed, kind of thing, whatever. It's just such a compelling piece of entertainment and like I say, in art and creative to evoke such a thing is so powerful. I love it.
Alex, do you want to talk about your triple meaning for the rescue?
Yeah.
Well,
right?
You know, let me say this about Luke Skywalker. It's my wife. You know, she's a Star Wars fan because of me, but she's not really into the lore. And she actually asked me if Padme was Princess Leia one time, and I was like, get out of my house. But. But, you know, the level of commitment that, you know, people like Ron and Steven and William and Tony and Ricky, the level of commitment that we have to the storytelling, it can't be stated. It can't, you can say this thing, but to make people understand the emotion behind it, that's another thing. When Luke came on and he undoes the hood the way he does in Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
She said, "Oh, out loud in front of our kids." And my daughter, she's always like, "Language." She gave my, she shot my wife a look.
Language.
So, as I'm watching it, Luke, the Jedi turns in the camera on the screen. The Jedi turns, and his cape kind of flies open, and you see that distinctive belt. I knew it was Luke. I knew it was an X-wing coming in, not in combat configuration, not to blow the ship up, but to land by itself. I was like, "This is Luke," and I want to say, not for nothing, but I called it. But
I went back listening. You're like, "Oh, Alex is spot on."
yeah, thank you. But there's. Something, you know, the title of this episode was called The Rescue, and as I'm watching it, it kind of dawned on me, like, with Mayfield and the viewer, Fumiyama made us feel what the Mando was experiencing when Mayfeld was explaining about how you blow up Alderaan, you blow up Mandalore, none of it matters, you're him, we're there, just taking off the helmet, you know. So we kind of had that trip as viewers at the beginning of the episode. We're rooting for the bad guys, and then at the end you see how evil Hess is, and now you're rooting for the good guys again. With this episode, the rescue, and you know, I don't want to sound like I'm crapping on DST, okay? But there were there's always a but, and it's a big but too. So,
we've seen your top half, so
So there does seem to be I don't think it's deniable that the love and care that has been paid to these characters is just a little bit lacking, either through design or through negligence or just ignorance of how dedicated we are to these characters in the story, right? So to me, the rescue, it felt, as I was watching it, it wasn't just a literal rescue where they're rescuing Baby Yoda. It was also a rescue of this character, which so many people, you know, not everybody, but a lot of people feel was maligned. But it's also a rescue of fans like Ron, who and myself, who have been waiting to see this Luke. So this episode has, to me, triple meaning, you know, the literal rescue, what we see on screen, the rescue of this character, and also the rescue of a fandom that feels like we've been left behind.
Yeah, and I certainly don't want us to go down the comparing the go, you know, the contrast and that kind of stuff. We can do that for another debrief at a future date. But I think the way they set this thing up, it had, you know, when you think about it, the obvious choice for who to come to Grogu had to be Luke. I mean, why would anybody else turn up?
Hindsight, easy. The X-Wing, yeah, sure. Of course it's Luke, of course. But watching it was not for me. It was not, of course, it's Luke. You know, no. and that was what was great about that first time. You only get that one first chance to be exposed to who is it, what is it, and everybody had that feeling, and everybody watched it, and you know, when did you know, or when did you let yourself be allowed to say yes, it's Luke, kind of moment type of thing or whatever, and that's what's incredibly powerful. But yeah, in hindsight, it's so easy to go, well, of course, who else is it going to be?
I feel like everybody, if you asked anybody, you know, beforehand, and you really thought about the situation and the way they set it up, I think everybody would have said Luke makes the most sense, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But because I know for me, if you had asked me, I would say, yeah, of course, you know, at this period of time, probably the most powerful Jedi out there that we know is Luke. So it would make sense that he would be the one. But I never thought that they would do it.
No.
as much as Luke would have made sense. I never would have thought that it was Luke. I thought, yeah, well, he makes sense, but they're not going to bring in Luke.
How does it make sense because of what we know? So there's just so much more story in it, and that's why we wouldn't let ourselves go with it makes sense to be Luke, but they're not going to do that because the ramifications of such.
But like watching that X-Wing land and stuff, like not one second did I ever think it's Mace Windu.
No.
Yeah, but you didn't think, or did you?
That's
what I want to know to everybody is, when did you allow yourself to unequivocally say, oh yeah, it's Luke? As soon as you see the X-Wing, because
I was kind of on the same thing. When you saw the X-Wing, I was like, I hope it's not Dave Filoni. That would be so lame. Like, that would be like the lamest one. But like, you know, you see him walking. You see as soon as he walked through the hall with the hood, I'm like, okay, I know that hood. And then you know, as soon as you see the hilt, and then when he turns around, I'm like, yeah, that's Luke. And then walking through, and you can see the belt and all, like, you know, like you were saying earlier, like, yeah. And then of course the saber, like, it was just awesome just to watch.
But did you guys notice also, like, the moves he was using, like the way he moved, they really matched it up to his moves and the way he fought in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I even thought sequel trilogy moves were there. Some of the spinning, the low spinning stuff was him. Uh-huh. You know, what he does to Kylo, dodging sabers or whatever. But yeah, I thought some of the low spinning stuff were there.
And he wasn't overpowered either. It wasn't a, you know, a gratuitous the Force Unleashed kind of deal, right? And you know, when people go on about, you know, oh, everyone wanted to see Luke take down Star Destroyers, I didn't want to see that. I never wanted to see that, right? But I wanted to see the Luke of old. The Luke that we had in Return of the Jedi is what I wanted, right? And that's all I wanted, and I got
this
it there.
This episode like Return of the Jedi, like,
yes,
vibes. The whole thing was, like, even the ending, you know, like, it's...
We're still wearing the same clothes.
Yeah, he's still in St. Cloud.
Well, it speaks to the problem with it being, you know, something we said about, you know, it's easy to be Luke, but you can't believe they go there, because if it is Luke, there's nothing to stop. As vaunted as we want to put Luke to be, and that's why the sequel trilogies are so powerful, because if it's Luke, well, then, all right, there's never a problem that can't be solved.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like Vader in Rebels. You can't bring Vader into Rebels because there's never going to be a real challenge to him, kind of thing or whatever. And I believe that's true of telling stories with Luke as a central character, or in the movies for the sequel trilogies, anything, because it's just like, well, okay, nothing's really going to challenge him or whatever. So that's why I think the sequel trilogies are powerful in that sense, because you see him at a point where he is. And I think this even helps to solidify and make, for those that enjoy it, such as myself, makes the sequel trilogies even more powerful and more poignant and more to the point of, oh, wow, what happened to Luke? Because we see this now. We truly see what we wanted to see and wondered about. And, you know, so now there's even more to the, well, what happens? How does he get to that point? Holy crap. What goes on that gets this Luke in chapter 16, you know, to a point of the movies kind of thing, whatever. It's just like, you know, we want to know more of that downfall, so to speak.
I need to ask a question which came to mind when I was rewatching yesterday. Yeah, I rewatched it twice. And yeah, Tony was almost ready to give me a medal, I believe.
I was so proud of you, Stephen.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Now, but what I was thinking was, we go back to the Ahsoka episode. And you're probably going to answer the question. Or it's one of those ones when I asked the question, it sort of answered itself. Why didn't she ever suggest Luke to Mando? Now, does that answer itself by the fact that she came back after the Death Star 2 explosion, that kind of stuff, so she doesn't really know much about what happened?
Well, she doesn't know Luke at all.
Right.
Well, I mean, Mando doesn't know Skywalker.
She must know during her meditation. She must pick up on some Force vibes and that kind of stuff off him.
If she knew that the son of Skywalker was out there, and she ignored that, that's kind of a hard pill to swallow.
Always been the problem with the Ahsoka piece and Ahsoka being around during the OT in terms of alive. She's not around, obviously. She's off gallivanting. So, yeah, it has to be that she's off gallivanting to some extent, because we get to that conundrum of, well, wait, why isn't she helping the take down the Empire? Why isn't she helping the son of Skywalker? All of that. So there's more story to tell.
And she already met Luke already, because how else would she know about that planet? And maybe that's what, maybe she, you know, just points everyone in that direction. You know, maybe she scouts for Luke in a sense, you know, without really knowing. But
she could reach out in the Force and find, you know, they could connect in some way. But she's not, that's where it falls apart. I know, but.
Well, she says there's not many of us left. Ahsoka's,
Ahsoka's moment to say, why not? But I don't think she's that in tune with, because she's not a Jedi, and she will tell you that over and over again. She's not a Jedi. So I don't think she's that in tune and kind of seeing what's out there.
She knows there's not many of them left.
That's an interesting point. We don't really ever see Ahsoka use
meditating.
The Force. She's very gifted in her skills, combat skills and all that, but do we ever really see Ahsoka like Obi-Wan, or like using the Force to
communicated with Grogu, probably. You know, she was communicating through the Force because he doesn't speak. You know,
But traditionally, all those Clone War episodes, we see her fight a lot, and she uses the Force to keep herself alive and jump around and predict a blaster bolt. But do we see her using the Force, like somebody said, in that meditative type of thing? So that's where she's not in tune or not connected to it in that sense. Yeah.
There's I'm gonna, this is kind of nerd lore. Well, look who I'm talking to. But this is more of a gaming thing. There are classes of Jedi in the games where there are sentinels, there are guardians, there are basically warriors and scouts. So they serve different purposes almost. I would say that Anakin was more of a guardian who uses the Force for defense, never for attack. But someone like Obi-Wan or Qui-Gon uses the Force for knowledge. You know, very rarely, or every once in a while, you get a Jedi who does both, like Yoda. But I get the feeling that Ahsoka falls into the category of I guess, guardian? Not sentinel or emissary. She fights the small fights as opposed to tackling galactic issues like Qui-Gon and yeah, like the living force versus the cosmic force. So
I don't know, guys. I think you need to think back to the Mortis trilogy stuff, the actual stuff in the Clone Wars. And in that episode in The Mandalorian, there was that owl thing, right? So she's bigger picture. She's bigger picture than just that.
She's needed. Yeah, I feel like she's always done that even since Clone Wars and with the even in Rebels and going to the World Between Worlds and all that stuff. She kind of knows where she's supposed to go. So she kind of stays out of certain conflicts and then she comes in and does the... I feel like she's like, since she's not a Jedi, she feels like she's a pick up the pieces kind of character. That's her role.
I do think she's bigger picture, but and like you said, she does go where she's needed. But and it's really neither here nor there yet because I guess we wait to see what kind of Jedi she is in the series, right? So it's still TBD kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Plus, I don't think she would have been the right person to teach Grogu for the same reason that she doesn't really consider herself a Jedi, and you know, she's a Force user, but you know, she's not that. I don't think she wants to create more Jedi when she doesn't believe in the Jedi.
But I think it goes back to what she says in that episode. She says, "I don't want to train anybody because I see what could happen." But she in the Clone Wars, though, she was with those younglings on Ilum, so that's part of the tradition. Now she's no longer a Jedi.
That was back when she was with the Order.
Ultimately, I think, like I said, it goes back to what she said in that episode. She doesn't want to train anybody because she doesn't want anyone to become the next Anakin.
Yeah. Do you guys think that Luke would have found out all the stuff that he was telling Rey, you know, in Last Jedi? He would have learned that stuff from Ahsoka at some point if they run into each other? That she explains everything that happened in the Clone Wars and everything with his dad and that's all that stuff?
It's possible.
I think that'd be something they could help cover.
I'm sure they're bound to meet at some point, whether it's in a book, comic, or...
Yeah, I mean, I kind of thought that, like, I always had that idea, right? That, oh, you know, because when they started kind of painting that Ahsoka was still around, and, you know, I thought, oh, well, for sure, you know, when, you know, we didn't see it on screen, but off screen after the battles, you know, like, oh, they hooked up, and then she's like, oh, you know, you're dead, and blah, 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 the whole thing. But now, the way that they're playing around with, we don't really know when Ahsoka was around, you know, I mean, she was... She was gone. We don't know what her involvement was or when she came back or whatever. So at this point, we honestly really don't know whether she's met him or not. Yeah. Or whether they even ever will meet. You know what I mean? But
I would
imagine that if they did, of course she's going to like totally give him all the stories about his dad, you know?
Yeah, I don't think they've met yet.
Well, this is where we, you know, where we put on our yoga pants and do some stretching, right? I think that Ezra, who met Yoda, who knows of Luke, probably would have mentioned something about these Force users to Ahsoka. But that's something that happens off screen, I guess. That's the headcanon, I guess. But Yoda met Ezra on Lothal. And Yoda's connected to Luke and Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon and such. So maybe Ezra, I can't imagine Ezra going back to the ghost and not saying anything to the only other Jedi. Well, the other Jedi that he meets who seems to be active in the Force and not say anything. But, you know, like I said, that's me filling in the gaps.
So like for the movies, I think Luke is like probably the only Jedi we see reach out in the Force and connect with someone. Like he did it with Leia. He did it a couple times with Leia.
I want to bring it because we're going to run out of time quickly. Bring it back to the episode. Did anyone else? So the same feels that I got for Luke and everything, and was dumbfounded by how the emotions washing over me. Did anyone get the same thing when R2 rolls in? Because when Archie rolls in, I got a second wave of holy crap, I can't believe they're doing this. And, you know, what a great cherry on top of a perfect piece of cake that was Luke is to have R2 roll in.
His buddy.
And I've seen some people post or whatever that it's interesting that Grogu, he said go and gave him permission, sets him down, but Grogu's back to climbing on his leg. Doesn't want to go, basically. But when R2 rolls in, Grogu is intrigued by R2, and I first blush took it as a little kid kind of intrigued. You know, every kid loves R2, and that's why it goes over to him. But I've seen some chatter. You know, could it have been R2 that had something to do in rescuing
with the rescue? Wow! Grogu?
And or is R2 a recognized figure to Grogu because it's R2? You know, it's like something familiar. I recognize this and helps to go to it, but. Yeah, that R2 rolling in was just another, whatever the reverse of gut punch is in terms of a good thing, because it was a second time, which was just wonderfully executed. And in the helmet, so that was the other thing. The removal of the helmet, did they not spoil it, but could it have been more? It was very powerful to see because he did it, but he had just done it the episode before.
They should have saved it.
Yeah, if he hadn't done it there and saved it for this, I think that could have been just even holy cow kind of moment. But it was
he didn't do it for survival this time. He did it because he wanted to.
That's a great point. He absolutely had to. There was no way out of it. You had to throw the code out at that point for survival. This was truly by choice. To throw the code out at this point for this moment in time.
He's like, I gotta look at this kid with my own eyes.
Yeah. You know? So that's a great point, Ricky.
It brought the whole thing full circle. It brought the whole thing full circle because at the beginning of the series, nothing was more important to Mando than his creed. You know. And the whole thing about, have you ever shown your face to anyone? And, you know, that whole thing. So it's like nothing was more important than that until, you know, we come all the way to the end here. And now basically nothing is more important to him than Grogu, you know.
That's beautiful. Yep. Yep. Love it. Yep.
I got a little bit of the Shmi Skywalker vibe off of that, too, when she's with Anakin on Tatooine. Yeah, right? And she says, don't look back. I think that's what she says. And then Mando says, don't be afraid. Is that what he says?
Yeah,
very much so. That thing. But the other thing I wanted to say back to the point about R2, I feel like with these iconic characters, Superman, Batman, you know, Luke Skywalker, they all have these components to them. So Batman has, you know, obviously the ears and the cowl and cape and the symbol and the belt and the boots. Luke is very much like that, and I feel like R2 is a piece of that. Because Luke, you've got that cool belt, the hilt, the cloak, the black glove, and R2, I feel, is another big component of the Luke Skywalker character.
Yeah,
it's the collector set.
Absolutely.
So did the deep fake and the voice stuff all work for people? So I hear one or two people moaning about that online, as people might do. But I mean,
I think the emotion and what it was overpowered the fact that, you know, it wasn't perfect. But at least for me, they never are.
They never are.
You know, I was willing to overlook that just because of what we were getting. You know what I mean? I couldn't have expected, you know, a whole lot more than that. So I mean, I was fine with it.
My father thought they used
old footage. So I'm like, no, it's clearly CGI. But I mean, to some people, it looks like they just used old footage from the other movies.
I know they didn't, but I'm just saying,
like, other people that aren't so in tune like us, like, you know, they didn't really pay too much attention to it. Yeah.
He throws that hood back, and how the sausage made goes out the window.
Yeah.
Because you can't get that without knowing how the sausage is made. So having a problem with how the sausage is made in order to get that on screen, either you want Luke Skywalker back or you don't. So you can't complain about the, it was so bad. Yeah. And oh, it could have been, just pound sand. Accept it. This is how we get Luke. The best part of all that I wondered, and we did, we got Mark's voice. That's what I was also excited for. And as much as I was excited for the fans that wanted Luke and for my nephew to be able, Mark got to portray and got to see Luke be Luke that he wanted and it was a little upset with and not getting to do in the sequel trilogy. So he was very excited about it. And I saw someone post that he had a tweet somewhere late Saturday. Mark, the ultimate internet troll, he's just a gifted individual. That his tweet was, "So, have you seen anything good on TV lately?"
Awesome, beautiful
tweet that he knows exactly what we saw and what we took in and all of that. That is just the best tweet ever in terms of timing and what it means, kind of thing, whatever. To have that. My eight year old nephew had no idea that it was. He took it as Luke. He's CGI and fake and it's an old guy, an actor. He has no idea that that's a concept or a thing. He saw Luke on the screen talking to the Mandalorian with R2, so the CGI stuff out the window. If that kid buys it, then it works. And that's the point of what we got.
So I want to ask this question is, do we think there's potential now? Do you think that because of the overwhelming reaction of this appearance by Luke in Mandalorian, do we think that there is potential for a spinoff? Do you think that Disney's going to look at this and going to say, oh my gosh, people are just over the moon for this. Is there a potential there for a spinoff for Luke in this time frame with him traveling the galaxy and doing exactly what he just did just then?
I'd say there is.
Just gathering.
But right. telling what story and when would there ever be peril or strife and who is he? I kind of like it open ended. But again, I've always said this: unless somebody comes up with a creative, don't do it just to fart out content. To put a Luke Skywalker because it'll sell and it's the right time to do it. If a creative comes up and says, I've got a pitch for a Star Wars, for a Mark Hamill, or for a Luke Skywalker thing for two series or whatever, to tell a story to get us from point A to point B or closer to point B or something like that, and it's good, then run with it. But God, I hope you just don't do it just because you can, because the iron's hot. Don't strike, don't have that kind of mentality and water down Luke, water down
the epic journey. If they use him sparingly throughout these other shows, I'm fine with it. Like, even if we get like one scene.
Well, but that's also always the problem with Luke bringing him back. We said about how could he and will they actually do it? It makes sense, but will they do it? Yeah. Well, now that he's in play, you're always going to have that. Well, why didn't Luke come save him? Why didn't, there's going to be that potential aspect of storytelling. That's always going to be you got to have some reason why he couldn't, and with him having Grogu and what we know about him, there could be that's why, because he's trying to rebuild a Jedi order or something to that extent.
That's a point. I wanted to make
large scale, skirmishes either. So.
Because they always would say, I know I would hear like, oh, well, if you bring back or you bring somebody like from the big three, let's just say, it kind of really overpowers whatever you're trying to do. And I felt that as much as I loved it, as much as I wanted to see it, as much as I got it, I'm so happy we did. From the point of view of like, say, what the writers were trying to do with their story, I felt like it totally overpowered. Because look, honestly, if you really step back right now, all anybody's really talking about is Luke Skywalker. Nobody's really talking as much about Grogu leaving. You know what I mean? Like that's secondary. You know what I mean? And that was the main thing of the show, not Luke Skywalker. You know what I mean? But so I do see how, bringing these characters in, it sort of derails the story. I'm glad to see. I mean, fine, derail the story. I don't care. I do see where that could happen.
I can understand your point, but at the same time, I can see it as Luke is the vehicle to which to remove Grogu from the Mandalorian because this season, it's been a lot of fetch quests and a lot of, oh, I got to go to point A, yeah, to point B. And they kind of had to take him off the board because there was, I think it was really hamstringing the creativity in terms of the storytelling. They really did have to take him away. And I'm sure we're going to see him again. There's no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just, I felt like he had to come off the board at least for a short period of time in a safe place, right? Like, I just felt like that had to happen. And, you know, the real two pillars of that episode, of course, was Luke, but the other part of it was that, you know, that tearing your heart apart about Grogu leaving the Mandalorian. So yeah, Luke was huge this time, but that was a big part of that, and that's been the core of this show is that relationship. So
well, and then yeah, now they can move forward with the whole restoring Mandalore thing, which
exactly
apparently
exactly.
That's yeah what they're going to go for.
And it's
which I wanted to ask you guys though. What do you think the deal was with Bo-Katan not being able to take the sword when Sabine clearly gave it to her? Do you think Gideon took it from her previously, like they have history there, or do you think it was maybe somebody else?
I think that Gideon definitely probably took it from her. But the other thing is, you know, like I think has been said, you know, like how come she couldn't just accept it from Mandalorian the way she did from Sabine? There's obviously a reason.
There's something in Moff Gideon's speech where he says again, she can't take it again, or she can't be given it again, or something.
Yeah.
He says the word again.
There's obviously a reason that we don't know, and I'm sure it'll get explained. It's just like how come Mando couldn't take his helmet off when everybody else could? There was a reason. We just don't know what that reason is yet.
But it makes like you said, more story, season three, more story season to four tell, fodder. Yeah. Exactly.
We'll find out next season.
To the point of you know, bringing one of the big three back, and if you did that, and if they did that in the movies, right? The movie creative said that they had that issue. If you bring that back, they take over the whole thing, take over the scene, take over the movie. It'd be very true of the movie that has a 2-hour-ish time constraint. Whereas here in a series, they can do what they did, and it doesn't take over the whole thing and be be that big thing that's in front of it. They can address it and go away from it because they have all these other through lines and they have multiple season, multiple hours to catch up. You know, the Mandalorian versus the sequel trilogy has so much more content because it's been 16 chapters at what, you know, however that time frame was. True, the Clone Wars, it's been able to expand out, whereas a movie is a 2-hour hit of trying to encapsulate.
I think I have something to say to that, Ron. You can create your own reality when you're writing stuff that's imaginary, you know what I mean? So for someone whose job it is to create imaginary things to say that they are constrained by imaginary things is kind of a cop-out. You know, like Ricky said, you can have Luke sprinkled amongst all the other new Star Wars projects, and he won't take over the show. He could show up in Ahsoka. He could show up in Lando. He could show up in
very sparingly, though.
Yeah, you can't sprinkle him in a movie. You can't have him come in for 15 minutes.
And that's the difference between the show and the sequels, because you have to have big stories for movies. You can't have big stories or small stories like you have on Mandalorian fill in a movie that everyone's going to buy a ticket to and go. And that's the difference between the timelines and the movies and the shows.
But I believe that more resources and more creativity goes into a major motion picture than to a Disney Plus series. So when you have the ending saga, the saga ending trilogy, and you're saying that you can't introduce a legacy character, which the legacy has been built upon, when you're saying you can't introduce him properly because he's going to suck all the air, Michael Arndt said that. He said that he can't write Luke Skywalker because every time he showed up, he got all the focus, right? This is the thing. We just saw it on screen. And it was done in one episode.
He sucked all the focus.
No, but
yeah, I think you're hurting your point, Alex.
No. The impactful moment of that episode was Luke Skywalker showing up. But the impactful moment of the series that's been going on for two seasons was Grogu leaving.
Yep, that was the emotional climax right there.
Let's not bury the point. I mean, I love Luke Skywalker, and I want him to be served properly. Time will tell.
What we'll talk about The Mandalorian Season 2 was how epic it was to see Luke.
Well,
it was that the Grogu left.
Well, people, you know what? You're right, because...
No, I think he did suck, but because it's episodic, they can pump air back into it next season.
But how much of a downer would it have been to end the season without Luke and have Grogu still gone? You needed that.
So there you have it.
Otherwise, Christmas is ruined for millions of children.
entire childhoods.
Yes.
Second watch, I would have liked to have seen or liked to have heard some more John Williams-esque music as Luke's fighting around.
Yeah, I expected Luke's John Williams theme fighting around because then it would instantly.
I wanted more of the robot dubstep that we got when the Dark Troopers. That was amazing.
Hey, does the static Starfield bother anybody when they're on the bridge of the ship? Okay, thank you. Yeah, just of all the details that they pay attention to or whatever, that static Starfield just feels like a painted background. It's not digital.
They have the volume. How come they couldn't have used the volume for
that? Animate the volume.
That was... they couldn't do a cool Starfield with that?
I didn't even notice that, but...
And then they definitely have an Anakin Grievous situation on their hands in terms of Luke and Boba Fett can't get together in the same room.
Yeah. Right.
Those two. Yeah. Boba Fett, I think, has more history against Luke than Luke might not recognize. He obviously didn't care to recognize because he was in a room full of Mandos and didn't like freak out at all. He didn't know what when that bridge door opens, he doesn't know what he's getting into. He can sense through the Force maybe there's four or five people in there, but he doesn't. So when that door opens up, should have a little bit of what am I walking into situation. He's Luke Skywalker. He's not going to care about that. But Luke and Boba Fett can't really get together because how is that going to go, right? That can't.
Awkward.
but that leads into the ending, the after credits scene.
So that's why I was trying to run out of time. Did everybody stay? Or did you have to go back and find out?
The first time I did not. It was the second time.
I was so wrapped in emotion. I knew there was 6 minutes left. I was soaking it in, trying to figure out what I just witnessed. And just in all of... And the credits are rolling, and I'm trying to just, like, holy crap, you know, gather myself to some extent or whatever. And then it shows up, and I'm like, oh, okay.
So the ending was the only real disappointment in some respects, in that the way they played it. I was disappointed we didn't get the images... The visual.
The concept art.
Yeah. I didn't even miss that one.
I totally did because I love that because I watched. Yeah, all
you're right. You're right.
Yeah, I was like, wait, where's the pictures? Yeah.
Stay tuned. Yeah.
And I sooner they put the Boba Fett thing right at the end, or right after the last scene, rather than just inject it midway through credits rolling, which just seemed really odd. But I knew there was something to come because, actually, there's still 6 minutes left on the timer. So I knew there was something coming up.
How does Bib survive? Wasn't he not on the barge?
He was on the barge.
We asked that
question. He was on the barge, but who knows?
Okay, so he wasn't. That was the question I needed to know. He was, in fact, on the barge.
That's probably why he's gained so much weight. He's just been recuperating. He's just been
scoffing everything since then. Yeah.
This isn't too much longer afterwards, and it speaks volumes as to what happened to Jabba's palace, because we kind of figured everybody was watching that or whatever. So
I mean, was it worth bringing him back just for that?
Yeah,
I'm not sure why
was Fett so mad at him?
Yeah, that's what I think. Maybe he knew he just never went back to go save him, or he ditched him. You know?
Well, yeah, nobody did. Yeah.
That's what it would have been. And wait, if you're alive, then that means you could have come help me. But it also speaks volumes of where's the Slave One, because he didn't park it knowing he was going to be digesting in a Sarlacc pit. So, you know, he had to have parked it somewhere convenient.
How did
Boba lose his, armor? Maybe, if Fortuna had something to do with that too,
I was surprised he took him out. I thought he was. I did not see that coming or whatever. So when he took him out, I was like, "Oh man."
Does he take over Jabba's? Is he taking over Jabba's empire?
Which they kind of set up. in like the second episode with the Marshall guy, where he's like, yeah, once, you know, the Death Star blew up, which was, you know, coinciding with Jabba being killed and lawlessness on Tatooine, somebody has to keep order, you know.
Okay.
Well, then that speaks
so
to
it
the
makes,
two.
It makes whether... sense that Bib would have taken over. I mean, he was the second.
He was running things,
kind of, I guess, right?
Right. Him. But so, but yeah. So, do we think the Fett series, like, there was speculation it was going to be, you know, or is it going to be flashbacky, or is it going to jump all around? Because we see him take the throne. That's after. That's with Fennec, so that's in the same timeline as the Mandalorian.
I think the Boba Fett, whatever it is going to fill in what happened after the Sarlacc, leading all the way up to Mandalorian, and then it'll just kick in with what he's going to do with Jabba's palace and empire.
Hey, you got. How does Fett end?
You can bring Hondo in. You know, like do all kinds of stuff with pirates.
Well, that's true. Yeah. And really do the Disney could really gin up the Batuu and do a lot of stuff there. That,
I hope so.
Where I talk about farting out, they could fart out content all they want that doesn't affect.
It.
Yeah, it doesn't interrupt, doesn't hurt the saga aspect of things or whatever, and doesn't mess with any sort of continuity. It might mess with the EU folks to some extent, but
I mean, who are they posing to at the end? Because, you know, he shoots. Bib, you know, chucks him out the chair, sits down.
The fans, it was a Sopranos
drink.
Moment.
That was for us.
That was for every Boba Fett fan out there.
It was their Christmas card.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Which, by the way, I saw that Paul Bateman posted that, yes, the Boba show is one thing and season 3 is another thing.
Yeah.
So both are coming. They're not, you know, one's not supplanted.
So to that end, did the season 2 feel like is this a season finale? Did I miss a memo somewhere? Because it definitely had my daughter thought that. She's like, wait, is this over? Because Grogu's, you know, is gone. I'm like,
I had really that too. Them. Somebody was.
After all that Luke turning up and that kind of stuff, I think they really muddied the waters at the end, and that was just the end for my brain. I ain't got a clue what's going on now.
As secretive as the show needed to be, because there was just no spoilers about Luke coming back and even Baby Yoda and all that. Was there a marketing department head, president, vice president, or somewhere that got blindsided Friday and said, "Wait, what? There's no more Grogu?"
I think there was a 24-hour leak, wasn't there? Because Will and Matt were going on about don't look at Twitter.
Yeah.
Well, that was because of Luke. What I'm suggesting is, did a marketing guy in Disney just found out that his gold mine, their gold mine that is Grogu has just gone away? Or were they given a heads up? Because, you know, the Razor Crest was kept silent. Luke was kept silent. Even Baby Yoda was kept silent. You know, there wasn't a lot of leaks around it.
Baby Yoda animated series coming soon.
In order to keep that leak, you know, stringent, did they not warn some marketing yahoo that, oh, yeah, all that merch that you're selling for Baby Yoda, you better milk that cow now, baby, because it's not going to be around next season for the Mando because he's gone. I was surprised.
Aren't you glad that's not the case, though? I mean, I think they knew that he was going to be hot for a minute, but I think when a character is popular, it's popular. You know, whether he's
you strike
or
while
whether
iron's
alive,
hot. Sure.
Or whether, you know,
I really you think know, they kept. Yeah. I really believe towards the they kept go to quiet in terms of not leaking or anything, because there was a potential fear of Jar Jar backlashes that, wait, there can't be a baby, you know, that they sprung it on us. We accepted it a lot more easier than we did if we'd have had time to think about, you know, if we would have saw it in a preview or something and started speculating and started expecting and started ruminating on what it means to see this little baby green Yoda looking thing. But to have it surprised on us, we all loved it.
I think Star Wars does show that you can show a character for a minute or like have them die in a movie, and they're still widely popular for years.
Well,
years
if the story's good, that's my thing. You write the right story, man. That's very, very true. Make it about the story.
So, all right, next season, is there a date for the next season?
Next year,
isn't it? Book of Boba said December 2021, but season 3 should start in October, but I think COVID had pushed things back potentially. So whenever it starts, we'll all welcome it and watch it. Can't happen soon enough.
Yeah, the season actually started earlier this year because it was in mid-November when the season premiered. It was the 10th, I believe.
Yeah.
Don't forget, we've got the behind-the-scenes stuff next week, haven't we? So,
right.
Yeah, I heard that. That should be quite interesting. They're not doing this. The last one, the last gallery was like 5 episodes, but I heard this is just going to be like a 1 hour or 2 hour, whatever it is, special. And that's, you're just going to.
I didn't finish watching the first season.
Yeah.
I didn't finish watching for the first season.
Go soak them in.
I think I watched like the first two, maybe. First two or three.
There's a really good, Filoni spiel he does. He goes on for about 10 minutes and he ties
in. Yeah, I think that was the last. Yeah, I think I did see that one.
And the music one was good too. Hey, and to that point, I've posted this or whatever. I also, in that motion, in that wash of emotions, I felt for Dave and I felt for John, because as fans, they're in the George Lucas world of, they don't get to experience this. You know, Filoni is such a fan. Filoni's a cosplaying. He's one of us to some. You know, he's not far removed from being sitting on a Sunday on his computer chatting with us, type of thing or whatever. And he didn't get that experience. He does in terms of creating it, and he does in terms of being so much more closer to it and working with it and all that stuff that he wanted to do as his career and all that. But there's some part of me that feels for him a little bit, because they're no longer fans that get to enjoy what someone creates. So I'm hopeful for the other projects that they have, that he will be removed from it to some extent and be able to be a fan of something that's new Star Wars that he's not, you know,
got to enjoy it.
Right. Well, yeah. How much, that's a great thing, Ricky. Yeah. How much of this was totally surprised upon GL that if he watches this and sees faster, more intense Luke.
But clearly they have their finger on the pulse of fandom, because the gift they just gave us, I mean, come on.
To keep it secret, like, that's the best part.
Yeah.
For all of those, when I watch the credits and see all those names and hundreds, maybe a thousand, just the hundreds upon hundreds of names. Now, how many of them knew about Luke or whatever, but for in this day and age, for that to stay secret that it did, because we all speculated it could be Luke, but I didn't hear any rumors, rumblings. Now, I don't go searching for it either. Maybe it was out there on Reddit, but I didn't hear anything. It was like, oh, watch this last, you know, Luke's going to be, was it out there from somebody speculating, or was it out there from somebody actually saying, I know for a fact we're going to see him? So anyway, in this day and age, for that to be the surprise, awesome. Just awesome.
Yeah, I guess Mark said that they had to keep it secret for like a year or so. You know, that he's glad that it's really out now. Yeah, he tweeted something about, like, I can't believe we were able to keep this a secret for over a year.
Well, he did. And somebody had texted me, you know, it was stay off the internet Friday or whatever, because get on there kind of thing. And once or twice I got on there, I was like, oh, that's right, I'm supposed to not watch, or, you know, there's a new Mandalorian. Work and life has been so crazy, I kind of lost sight of it being the season finale. I mean, I knew it was, but I wasn't thinking it was going to be this epic season finale kind of thing or whatever. It's just, I know I need to stay away from the internet on Fridays type of mentality. But once or twice I got on there, I'm like, oh, yeah, no, I need to stay. God, I'm so glad I did not get spoiled. Yeah,
we all stayed up till like 1 a.m. Until the episode dropped to watch it, and I'm glad we did. I mean, it felt like we're waiting in a theater to watch a movie, to watch a Star Wars episode come. You know, it was.
So how does that work, Ricky? You're just hitting refresh on Disney Plus, waiting for.
Yeah, and then it went down like right at one, and so nothing was happening. And so then I tried on my phone, it wasn't working. I tried it on the TV, like it just wouldn't play, and then it kept saying error, and then finally it did, and we're like, okay, good. So that was fun. It felt like, you know, watching Episode 3 when it came out at midnight, or, you know, Episode 2 when it came out at midnight. I wish they still did the new ones at midnight. Now it's like you get 6 o'clock.
I like the destination viewership type of model that they're bringing back with Mandalorian, because, like you said, Ron, I'll go dark for 48 hours on Thursday, starting Thursday into Saturday morning, and I'll get off the internet. As a matter of fact, I kind of got spoiled, because I went onto one of the pages, and the picture on like the first picture that came up when I opened up the fan page was Luke Skywalker, a comparison between Return of Jedi Luke and New Luke. So I was like, oh man, but it wasn't a surprise to me. I was sure that it was Luke. So. But immediately after that, I shut off my computer and went to cry in a corner. but like you said, it's I can easily, on my phone at work, because I work nights, I can watch it as soon as it premieres, but I'll wait until Saturday afternoon when the kids
Watch it for the first time on your phone.
I beg
of all of you.
It's amazing, right? It's amazing how quiet they've been keeping. This is, you know, the same thing with Baby Grogu. It's to spring this on an unsuspecting public. This is a nice kind of surprise. I don't like the other kind of surprises, you know. But I was like, okay, look, it's confirmed. It's Luke. What I didn't expect was the gut punch, like you said, you know. Like you can know, like when your wife is pregnant and you're expecting a child. For 9 months, you're getting ready for this kid. You're like, yeah, this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna set up the room. We're gonna do this, that, and the other thing. And then when the baby comes, you realize that all your preparations have gone right out the window. So when Luke comes in and he takes off the hood, I was like, wow, this is like unexpectedly emotional. You know, it's so. I think the period of time between episodes definitely helps to make you wonder what's going
twofold,
on.
Twofold, the period, and then there's no trailer. You know, a movie gets a trailer to entice people to come see it. That's not necessary for an episodic show or whatever. We're all coming anyway. Yeah. So, right, a movie kind of, not spoils you, but a movie has you kind of know what's going on because of some of the spoiler or some of the stuff seen in a trailer.
And when the trend is to binge... For these guys to say, we're not going to let you guys binge. We're, you know, you can binge afterwards, but we're going to premiere each one of these, you know, like Ricky said, 1 o'clock in the morning, every Friday, people are lining up for that stuff. It's
I can't see any major franchise going with the binge, drop them all at once. Something new, something that needs to curry favor or curry an audience or whatever, it will drop all its things at once. But I would think anything major like this, Game of Thrones or some sort of franchise thing, will see the value in the week-to-week drop.
In the build-up. Okay.
Because you get buzz all week long. You get talked up. But if you're a no-name thing trying to start up or gin up a fan base or something, yeah, if you drop it all, then people can see the whole story all at once versus...
Like, well, Stranger Things, they do that. Like, it drops all at once, and by the time you're on the third episode, someone will be finished and reviewed it four times. Yeah.
Do you know if the Stranger Things has continued the binge model where they put them all out at once? Or because The Boys was – people got majorly upset because the first season of The Boys was like one binge. You know, all eight episodes came out in one shot. But this season, people were like, hey, wait a minute. Why are you doing this? They started doing weekly. And, you know –
Yeah, as far as I know, I mean – The new season got delayed, I think, because of COVID. But they did release a trailer, but I don't even know when that's supposed to come out now. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming they're going to drop it all like they have.
So the next Senate session, we get to talk.
We got to save something for next. It's only a couple weeks away.
Interview.
Dissect a little bit more or jump into the various bits of what
And we have got like all the.
It's a great recap of the episode.
We could compare the Death Stars again.
Yeah. And plus, we will have the gallery. We've got a bit of time in there. We will have the gallery to maybe see
all the other new shows and stuff which we haven't.
Yeah.
All the news that dropped. Yeah.
And Christmas.
Yeah. All that. Yes. So thank you very much, everybody.
Yep. This has been an absolutely fantastic Senate session, everyone.
Thank you for sharing with us, Ron.
You got
me emotional. I wasn't even
I was. It's. I was gonna say it was like that scene in Stand By Me where one guy starts throwing up, and then the other guy starts throwing up. Except it was
an odd comparison. Steven's not seen it yet. All right. So on that note, how many times, Steven, you've seen it twice? How many times has everybody seen it? I think I'm up to five.
Three. I've only seen it once. I saw it last night. So there are people who saw it when it came out. I saw it first time last night. So
you're the Steven of the group?
Yeah. I guess.
It's not going to happen very often. So.
American Steven.
there's a cool video I found on YouTube where somebody put the scene from Luke going through back to back with the cutting intertwined with the Vader scene from Rogue One. And it matches up pretty good. I'll try to post the link for you guys.
In the chat. I saw that. That was good.
Father and son.
Yeah.
Very good.
Epic stuff. Ladies, everyone, senators, great stuff. Everyone stay safe out there. Stay safe.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Bye. Nice to be with you all.
Bye.
Cheers.